We're gonna hear about some interesting women today from Exodus. Exodus chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. About this time, a man and a woman from the tribe of Levi got married. The woman became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She saw that he was a special baby and kept him hidden for 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she made a basket made of papyrus reeds and waterproofed it along with tar and pitch. She put the baby in a basket and laid it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile River. The baby's sister then stood at a distance, watching to see what would happen to him. Soon, Pharaoh's daughter came down to bathe in the river, and her attendants walked along the riverbank. When the princess saw the basket among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it for her. When the princess opened it, she saw the baby. The little boy was crying, and she felt sorry for him. "This must be one of the Hebrew children," she said. Then the baby's sister approached the princess. "Should I go and find one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" she asked. "Yes, do," the princess replied. So the girl went and called the baby's mother. "Take this baby and nurse him for me," the princess told the baby's mother. "I will pay you for your help." So the woman took her baby home and nursed him. Later, when the boy was older, his mother brought him back to the Pharaoh's daughter, who adopted him as her own son. The princess named him Moses, for she explained, "I lifted him out of the water." Queen Hatshepsut was one of the most famous women in all of Egypt. She ruled for 21 years during what is called a tense peace. She was called His Majesty herself. After a series of complex marriages and deaths, Hatshepsut made a grab for power. At an opportune moment, she crowned herself Pharaoh of Egypt, and she rebelled against her role as a woman. Although the Egyptians knew she was female, she was referred to as male because you couldn't be a pharaoh and be a woman. And she also referred to herself as a man. She wore the crowns and the clothing and the false beards worn by her male counterparts. In the 21 years that Hatshepsut ruled, there were no great military campaigns because typically women don't like war. She stayed away from the political turmoil that existed in the Middle East. She felt it was better if she and her people just minded their own business. Instead of warring, Hatshepsut saw to it that Egypt expanded its trade routes because typically women like shopping. Hatshepsut's reign came to a quick and a mysterious end. Some believe that she died of natural causes. But others believe that a nephew that she had tossed into the palace prison escaped and murdered her. In the end, Hatshepsut ruled as a powerful pharaoh, and she added great wealth to Egypt's treasuries. She deserves a special place in the great pharaoh's hall of fame. Now, why have I given you a history lesson on the only woman to be an Egyptian pharaoh? Well, if we compare Egyptian chronology and the historical record of the Bible with the writings of the Jewish historian Josephus, it is very likely that Queen Hatshepsut became pharaoh, but before that, she was the princess, the very princess, who drew Moses out of the water that fateful day. History does not reveal very much about Moses' biological mother as it does his adoptive mother. His adoptive mother's name was Jochebed. And here's what we know about Jochebed. Her name means "the Lord is our glory." She married a man named Amram, who was the son of Kohath, son of Levi. Biblical genealogy tells us that she was both Amram's wife and his aunt. It reminds me of that funny poem, "I Am My Own Grandpa." This poem describes a man who, through a series of marriages, becomes his own grandfather. Moses was born into a religiously elite family. Both parents came from the tribe of Levi, which is the most religious tribe you could have come from. And we know that Moses was not Jochebed's first child. He had a brother, Aaron, who was 3 years older, and then there was a sister named Miriam, who was older than both of the boys. Miriam and Aaron had been born before the decree came down from the Pharaoh to kill all of the Hebrew baby boys. All of Jochebed's children grew up to serve the Lord. Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt, Aaron became the first priest, and Miriam became a prophet. What Christian mother wouldn't give her right eye to have all of her children grow up and serve the Lord? The Bible, unlike any other document of its time, repeatedly recognizes the significant contribution of women. In today's passage, the men are not seen as contributing very much. Pharaoh is the killer of babies, the male babies are powerless, and the Hebrew men have seemingly said or done nothing to save the babies. At the same time, women are seen influencing the direction of history. The destiny of the nation of Israel is left in the hands of five proactive women, two midwives, a mother, a sister, and an Egyptian princess. The world Moses was born into was a world of slavery. The Pharaoh was fairly new to the scene, and he became very afraid of the Hebrews because their population was becoming enormous. In order to subdue the burgeoning population, Pharaoh made a cruel edict to kill all the baby boys. What he did not take into consideration was, when you threaten babies, women are going to revolt. Our text doesn't give very many details about the midwives. And here's what we do know. Number one, they are women. Number two, they are midwives. And three, they are slaves. However, we can assume some things about these women. Since the big dog of Egypt spoke face to face with Shipra and Puah, they were the leaders of their profession, because Pharaoh isn't just going to talk to anybody. It is significant that Shipra and Puah's names are mentioned in anywhere in Exodus. Most people's names in the first half of the book of Exodus are not mentioned. Even Pharaoh's name is not mentioned in this text, but we believe from historical accounts that he was Thutmose I. These five women are pointed out in biblical history because they feared God. The word feared here does not necessarily mean shaking in your boots. It means awe or respect. Shipra and Puah awed or respected God over and above Pharaoh. It would be good to note here that Pharaoh could have killed them both dead, but it did not seem to matter to them. Their loyalties lay with God. They understood the words that Jesus spoke generations later in Luke 12, 4 and 3. I tell you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who kill the body and after that can do no more. But I will show you whom you should fear. Fear him who after the killing of the body has power to throw you into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him. Pharaoh calls a meeting with Shipra and Puah. And Pharaoh tells them they've got to kill any of the male babies born to the Hebrews. I mean, they're there for their births, so it would be just very simple for them to just go ahead and kill them after they're born. But the midwives, fearing God, let the boys live. So the king calls another meeting, and he says, "What's the matter with you guys? Why are you disobeying my orders?" And the Hebrew midwives say, "Because the Hebrew women are not as delicate as the Egyptian women. They labor for hours. They're so dainty. But Hebrew women are more like cows. They pop out their babies before we can even get there." Well, Pharaoh likes this. He likes the idea that his women, the Egyptian women, are more dainty than the Hebrew women. Thus, the midwives get away with their little white lie. Pharaoh is not to be outdone, so he goes for plan B. If the midwives aren't going to kill the boys, the parents surely will, especially if he threatens to kill them too. He gave the command to the Hebrew people that if they saw a baby boy, they would toss him into the Nile River to drown or to be eaten by the crocodiles. Moses' mother technically obeys the order. In a literal sense, she puts her baby boy into the river just like she's supposed to. She had kept her child a secret for 3 months, which all of us who've had babies in our house know this would be no small task. At the point where she could not hide him anymore, she made an ark for him. I know all of our English texts say it's a basket. It's not a basket. In the Hebrew translations, it's called an ark, A-R-K. Anytime you see the word ark in the Bible, you know somebody is about to be saved. And in this text, Moses is about to be saved. So Jochebed hides her little baby in the ark, and she places the ark among the reeds in the Nile River. and the baby sister is left to protect him against the crocodiles. It is Pharaoh's daughter who discovers the ark. The fact that the baby is Hebrew presented a real problem for her. She really should, according to royal law, just kill this baby. But she had pity on him because the text was said that he was crying. And in her feelings of pity, she does the unthinkable. She breaks her father's law. This could have gotten her killed. Pharaoh didn't care if you were related to him. If you disobeyed his order, off with your head. Not only does she spare the baby, she adopts him. History tells us that Hatshepsut had only one biological child, but this child died as a youngster. Under these circumstances, Hatshepsut would have sought to adopt a male child to be her heir. Given Egyptian religious philosophies, she would have seen the baby Moses as a gift from the god of the Nile. The princess names her baby Moses. His name means son of the water, or drawn out, because she drew him out of the water. She could not have known that after he grew up, his name would take on a deeper meaning. Moses would draw his people out of Egypt. In a sudden burst of cleverness, the baby sister makes the princess an offer she can't refuse. The princess needed a nursing mother. If she would like, the slave girl offered, she could find a nurse for him, wink, wink. The princess readily agreed, and the girl fetches the baby's own mother. Moses' mother was able to take care of her son and instill godly values into him before she had to hand him back over to the Egyptian world. I can relate to both Jochebed and the Egyptian princess, as I have both given birth to babies and have adopted babies. I can feel the heartache of Jochebed and the joy of the princess. There's something personal about this story for me. Modern women can personalize the women in Moses' life too. Shipra and Pua, Jochebed, Miriam, and the Egyptian princess. They show us it's our job to save our kids from the things that would harm them. We can't just leave it to somebody else. No one else is going to have their best interests at heart. Their friends are going to lead them astray. And our schools are trying their dead level best to steer them away from the faith. Our political and judicial structures are not going to protect them. A lesson we can learn from the midwives is not to give in to our society's rules for our kids. There are forces in our world vying for the hearts and mind of our children. Educators are teaching them things that are not just wrong, but harmful. We don't have to just sign on the dotted line. We have to object for the sake of our kids. From Moses' mother, we can learn to put our children's future and well-being into the hands of God. Jochebed was able to entrust her child's welfare to God. She gave up one of her most precious things, her baby, and she trusted God to take care of him. Jochebed saw a potential inside of Moses. The original text, Moses was ki tob hu. That means he was not just beautiful to human beings, he was beautiful to God. Jochebed was able to see her child through the eyes of God. Jochebed had a strong relationship with the Lord, and it had to have been a strong relationship because every one of her children grew up to serve the Lord. She had to have made sure that Moses was indoctrinated in the ways of the Lord because in adulthood he turned against Egyptian ways and gods, and he showed loyalty to the Hebrews and to their God. She had a great deal of courage. She stood against the world and its rules. She didn't do what so many of us are doing around us and blindly accepting ungodly ideas that are pushed on us because we don't want to be seen as unpopular. We want people to like us. I don't think Jochebed had that problem. From Moses' sister, we can learn to be involved in the lives of other people's children. Miriam didn't just throw up her hands and say, "Not my circus, not my monkeys." Miriam was a girl of action. She was probably only 10 or 12 years old, but she was able to analyze the situation and boldly offer a solution to a real problem. We see in this young girl's life the shadow of the amazing woman she would become. Years after this episode, she worked side by side with her brothers to free their people from the clutches of Egypt. When Moses parted the Red Sea, it was this same girl, now a woman, who led the people in a song and dance to celebrate. From the Egyptian princess, we learn compassion for parentless children in our world, and they are everywhere. Even children who have moms and dads in the home sometimes are not really being raised by them. We know a lot of them from Rock House Kids. This princess treated this child as her own. She gave everything her world had to offer to Moses. She adopted him into her royal family. The historian Josephus says Moses was destined to become the next Pharaoh. The princess saw to it that Moses was educated. Acts chapter 7, 22 tells us that Moses was educated in all of the ways of the Egyptians. Egypt was one of the most academic and scientific societies on earth at its time. Moses could not have been uneducated and led that many Israelites through the wilderness. He would have had to lean on all of the education he received. He would have needed skills in mathematics, agriculture, navigation, warfare, meteorology, sociology, business administration, and that's just to name a few. And he got all of that at the hands of the Egyptian princess. The Egyptian princess adopted this little kid who should have been Crocodile Chow. She gave him everything her world had to offer. She literally saved him from death. I'm sure when Jochebed put him in the Nile River, she had no idea what's going to happen to him. I mean, pretty soon that kid is going to start wanting to crawl, right? It must have been a terrifying excursion for the whole family. But the princess swooped in and unwittingly not just saved a baby boy, but an entire nation. I want to take a sharp left turn this morning and issue a challenge to everyone, not just the women. The challenge is to adopt someone like the Egyptian princess did. And Elena is going to pass out little certificates of adoption to everyone. Now, I'm not talking about adopting a baby, but go ahead if you want to. I mean, after adopting a baby in my late 50s, it wasn't that bad. I'm talking about adopting a friend or a family member who needs Jesus. Somebody you know needs to be saved. Maybe you're the ark. You don't have to tell them you adopted them, or you can. That's up to you. We all know people who need the Lord. We all know people who need to be saved. We all know people who are spiritually dying. And this morning, I'm asking you to adopt one of them. What this means is you pray for them. You do acts of kindness for them. And you share Christ with them. You are there for them. Yes, it's a big challenge. I filled out mine. I won't tell you her name just in case she's watching online. But she happens to be a waitress at a restaurant that Jim and I go to. And we befriended her. And I text her probably once a week. And I've adopted her today. And I've signed on the dotted line. It's a responsibility. It's not something that you should take lightly. It's not something that I take lightly. And I'm going to give you just a moment to fill those out. And then we're going to receive Holy Communion. And as you receive Holy Communion, give yourself just an extra minute to say a prayer for this person on your certificate of adoption. Lord, each person whose name appears on this sheet of paper today, we present them to you, and we express in all seriousness and earnestness that we want these people to be saved. We want you to bring them into your kingdom. Help us, Lord, to be your vessels. Help us, Lord, to be your ark for these people. Amen.